So if you, in case you've forgotten, the topics that we are looking at over the month of May is the topics that you, the congregation, told us, the ministry staff, that you would like to hear preached on. In particular, these are topics that you thought non-churchgoers might be interested in coming and hearing. And the topic, as Dave already mentioned, the topic for today is quite an emotive topic of dealing with mental illness. And so since it's already an emotive topic, we thought we'd give it an equally emotive title, which is How Will You Fix My Mental Illness, God? How Will You Fix My Mental Illness? And that's sometimes the approach that people take to this topic. I'm just waiting around for God to fix my problem. The other extreme is to ignore mental illness altogether. And both these responses are actually quite dangerous, because what they're doing is they're taking an already existing problem and they're exacerbating it. What we want to do today is look at what the Bible says is a healthy approach to mental illness. As we're going to say, the Bible has much to say on this topic. And so whether we suffer from some form of mental illness ourselves, or we know someone, one of our loved ones, suffers in this way, our hope is that today we will be able to walk out of here better equipped to deal with this problem. And I've got 3 points to help us do this today, as your sermon outline suggests. So I want to begin by looking at how the Bible says mental illness is a reality. And if it's a reality, where are the points? Get them up behind me. There you go. If it's a reality, then simply ignoring mental illness is really dangerous. I then want to look at how the Bible presents a comprehensive approach to this topic. Now, by comprehensive, I mean that the Bible tackles this problem from a physical, an emotional, and a spiritual point of view. And I want to show that unless we have all three of those angles, then we will only ever get a partial handle on mental illness. I then want to conclude by getting practical. This is where I want to present at least some, not all, but at least some of the ways we can manage mental illness. So there they are, the reality of mental illness, the comprehensiveness of mental illness, and the management of mental illness. And we begin by looking at the reality of this problem, and we turn to our passage for this. So have a look at verse 20. Romans 8, verse 20. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and the glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for the adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. So what this passage is referring to is the curse that God put on creation all the way back in Genesis chapter 3. Now, for those who aren't familiar with Genesis chapter 3, what happened in Genesis chapter 3 was that Adam and Eve committed high treason against God. Right? So God had lovingly given them everything they needed. All right? He'd given them life. He'd given them a loving marriage. He'd literally given them a paradise to live in, and he gave them an intimate relationship with the creator of the universe. God would walk in the garden with them each and every day. He'd also given them one rule, and that rule was there to remind them who was really in charge, right? Which is God. Now, as it turns out, that rule was actually for their good, their well-being as well. All right? Do not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Rather than obey God in that, Adam and Eve kicked God off his throne and said, we're going to figure out the rules that we want to follow ourselves. Now, here's the thing. If someone tries to overthrow their government today, like in a coup d'etat, there's hell to pay, is there not? And rightly so. How much more when you commit high treason against God? And so what God did in Genesis 3 is he handed down his judgment for this wrongdoing. And that judgment has three aspects to it. Right? It has a physical aspect, an emotional aspect, and a spiritual aspect. So firstly, the physical aspect. God cursed his creation. No longer does the creation around us work for man and his wife. It works against them. So this is why we have things like floods and tsunamis and droughts and cyclones today. Okay, this passage says that creation itself was subject to frustration. On top of that, there's another physical element, which was that we are cut off from the tree of life, and that's why our bodies now decay and we die. So that's the physical. The second is emotional. God cursed human relationships. So rather than being very loving and very self-sacrificial with one another, humans are now suspicious of one another. We have a tendency to be very selfish and sometimes just downright nasty. Right? How many of us know firsthand the emotional pain, the enormous emotional pain that comes from relationship problems? And then thirdly, there's the spiritual aspect. Because of this sin, a huge chasm opened up between God and mankind. God cannot be in the presence of sinful humans without burning them up now. And so God couldn't walk in the garden with Adam and Eve anymore. All right, so this is what Paul is talking about in our passage today, that our world is subject to decay. And friends, no one is immune. And so part of the suffering we see in this world is emotional. It's mental. Let me share with you just two verses for now. We're going to get to some more. This is from Proverbs. Proverbs 12:25 says, an anxious heart, get that, an anxious heart weighs a man down. Or Proverbs 17:22, a crushed spirit dries up the bones. Right, there is two passages that are talking about anxiety and depression. And so people who say things like, oh, look, that mental illness, that's all in your head. Or the Christian version, just pray and God will take it away. These people are not doing justice to the weight of these passages. Right in our passage today, Paul is not giving us pithy little statements like, oh, every dark cloud has a silver lining. Right, he is saying that our world is broken. And that brokenness is to be lamented. It's not to be downplayed. It's not to be ignored. And so, friends, if you are here today and you know something is wrong emotionally, right, perhaps you have a sadness that you cannot explain. Perhaps you worry about things way more than other people do. Perhaps you experience overwhelming highs and lows in life. Perhaps you go through periods of thinking about harming yourself. Or perhaps you just don't think there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Friends, if this is you, then I need you to please know these three things. All right? Please know these three things. Number one, the Bible does not deny your suffering. Now, while we can't see mental illness like we might be able to see a broken arm, it doesn't mean it's not a real thing. It is a real thing. It is a reality, according to these passages in the Bible. Number two, the Bible tells us that God laments your suffering. God hates seeing his children in pain. But number three, and perhaps most importantly, is you're not alone. Right? Mental illness is a sad reality for many, many people living in this broken world. Now, fortunately, the Bible doesn't just present us with the problem of mental illness. It gives us a way to deal with it. But like anything worth doing in life, dealing with mental illness is not a simple thing. It's a very complex thing. And what I want to do for our second point is outline the links that the Bible makes between a person's physical well-being and their emotional well-being and their spiritual well-being. And in doing so, I want to show that we will never actually be able to manage mental illness well, effectively, unless we have all three of those aspects in play: physical well-being, emotional well-being, and spiritual well-being. So let's begin with the physical link. So we're up to point two. I'm going to give you a first passage is Proverbs 14, verse 30. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bone. So this verse says that if our heart, our emotions are at peace, then we are physically full of life. Yet if our heart is full of envy, we start to rot physically. Proverbs 17:22 says a similar thing. A cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. So check it out. A cheerful heart makes a person physically good. It's like good medicine, right? But those who are crushed, depressed, brought low, are being eaten up physically. Or then there's the emotional slash spiritual connection. We turn to Psalm 94 for this. When anxiety was great within me, your consolation brought joy to my soul. So we might not just experience anxiety in life, we might experience great anxieties in life. And notice, God's consolation doesn't fix those anxieties, it doesn't take them away. But a joyful soul certainly mitigates them. Friends, what the Bible teaches is that emotional well-being is connected to spiritual well-being, is connected to physical well-being. And the only way to properly approach mental illness is to take all three into account. I want to read to you one of the devotions from Tim Keller's book on Proverbs. It's actually the devotion set down for today, believe it or not, lucky I was reading ahead. It's not a coincidence, though, that it's the 14th of April. But let me read to you Tim Keller's thing for the 14th of April. And he's talking about another minister by the name of Richard Baxter. All right, so he says this. English minister Richard Baxter, even in the 17th century, knew that depression could be rooted in a physiological cause, emotional trauma, moral guilt, or spiritual warfare with evil forces. Baxter was not trained in modern science. He knew this from the scripture in general and the book of Proverbs in particular. Godly wisdom refuses to reduce depression, for example, to any one cause. It does not have simply a chemical or simply a moral or simply a spiritual cause. All the dimensions of our nature are usually involved. Friends, if we are to deal with the reality of mental illness, we must take a comprehensive approach. We need to look at the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual aspects involved. So, for our third point, here we go. Let's do this. Let's look at how to manage mental illness using this comprehensive approach. Now, I can't cover everything in the next 5 to 6 minutes, but I can give us a start. But before we do start, can I please stress the word manage? You see, as our sermon title for today suggests, God does actually promise to fix our mental illness, just not in this life, necessarily. We see that in our passage today. So have a look at verse 21 again. The creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. What Paul is talking about is that he has set aside a day, God has set aside a day when he will bring this current world with its suffering and decay to an end and bring in a perfect world. Now, the best place to see this is Revelation 21. Let's read this. This is the Apostle John. He says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and will be their God. He will wipe every tear away from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.'" Friends, God has promised that one day he will take away all our pain and our suffering, and that includes our mental pain and suffering. But that day is not until Jesus returns. Until then, the frustration that God caused to happen in this world will continue. Now, that's not to say that God can't intervene and do something miraculous in our lives. He can. But the physical, and the emotional and the spiritual curse that God handed down is going to remain until Jesus returns and calls us into eternity. So while we're trying to deal with this, what is a comprehensive management to mental illness look like? So we got three aspects: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Let's start with the physical. To properly manage one's mental well-being, we need to be looking after our physical well-being as well. And so all the experts, these are the medical doctors and surgeons, as well as the psychologists and psychiatrists, they say this includes things like getting enough sleep, having a balanced diet, and regular exercise. Right? If we are not actively pursuing those three things, we will struggle to manage our mental illness, our mental health overall. Right? You need those things. On top of that, if we have been prescribed medication for our particular condition, please take it. Right? You may feel that if you've been taking it for 10 or 15 years and everything is sweet, you may feel you no longer need it anymore, but please do not go off that medication without consulting your doctor. The fact is, the reason you're feeling okay is probably because the meds are doing its job. Right, I've seen too many lives fly off the wall because people have taken themselves off their meds without proper consultation. So that's the physical. The second aspect to this comprehensive approach is emotional. Friends, if you suspect that you're not coping emotionally or psychologically, please speak to someone. Right, find a trusted friend and just sit down and start to talk with them about it. You might be able to find a support group. We have a support group here in this church specifically for this, our Blues group. I love this ministry. People get together and they just talk about the things that they're dealing with. It is wonderful. Or the best thing you can do is to seek professional help through counselling. Now, I know many people are reluctant to seek counselling. There's various reasons for this. It could be financial reasons, all right? Counselling does cost money. I'm not going to hide it from you. It could be for reasons of shame. That's one of the big reasons, because people don't want to admit that they can't do it themselves. Or it could be for fear. You know, the roughest, toughest guys in this world, like footy players, rodeo riders, they run from counselling like scared little children. Do you know why? Because it hurts way more than physical pain, going to counselling. But here's the thing. If you broke your leg, right, really broke your leg, would any of those reasons, money, shame, or fear, would they stop you from going straight to the hospital? Of course not. Right? No one sits at home simply praying that God will miraculously fix their broken leg. We use the earthly resources God has given us, like doctors and surgeons. In the same way, God has blessed humanity with psychiatrists and psychologists and counselors to help treat emotional problems. Please do not ignore the counseling resources that God has blessed us with. Seek counseling. So that's the spiritual, that's the physical and the emotional. The third is the spiritual aspect to mental illness. And look, there are three things about this that I want to quickly note as we close. The first one is the one we've already mentioned. God has promised to one day fix our mental illness. And here's the thing. Knowing our future destination helps us cope with our present situation. Knowing our future destination helps us cope with our present situation. Let me put it to you like this. Imagine asking someone to sit in an uncomfortable little seat for 18 hours straight. You've got to sit there for the whole time, 18 hours. You have to stay there. You can get up for toilet breaks and that's it. Now, the seat does recline for that 18 hours, but only about 3 inches. And you've got to sit between two big, hairy strangers that you don't know. And for the entire time, the only thing you get to eat is airline food. Now, why would someone endure 18 hours of that, or worse, actually pay thousands of dollars for the privilege? It's because they know that at the end, they get a wonderful holiday in Europe or North America. Friends, it's the same with heaven. Our destination, our final destination, helps us deal with our present situation. Have a look at verse 18. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. Friends, the second we walk into heaven, all of the suffering we've endured on earth will be forgotten in an instant. Dostoevsky, the famous Russian novelist and philosopher, he said that he believed that the healing we will experience in heaven will be so glorious that it won't just make it possible to forgive the suffering we've endured on this earth, we will actually be able to justify that suffering. Incredible. But here's the thing, if we do not have a firm grasp on the glory that will be revealed in us, then it is very difficult to manage our current suffering. See how we need the spiritual aspect? Well, that's the first one. There's a second thing about the spiritual aspect, and that is the sense of guilt and shame that comes in this life. Certain types of mental illness stem from what psychologists call toxic shame. Now, as humans, we have all done things that we regret. We've all done things that we're ashamed of, that we wish we hadn't done. But if we don't find a way to deal with that guilt, that moral guilt and that shame, it has a way to actually crush us emotionally. But this is where the gospel of Jesus Christ shines way brighter than any psychological method. We see this in verse 32. So just flick over the page. Romans 8, 32. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. So here's the thing. You and I, we cannot deal definitively with moral guilt ourselves. And we cannot do it through counselling. No counsellor can take away our moral guilt. They don't have the power. Only Jesus has. You see, the sole reason Jesus came to earth was to take the sin of the world upon his shoulders on the cross. And the way to access this gift, according to the Bible, it is dead simple. Two very simple steps. Number one, you say sorry for your sin. And number two, you ask God to show us how to live without sin. That's it. It's simple. And so, friends, if you are here today and you are dealing with the shame of something that you have done, then please know there is a way out of that shame. We actually see this in the first verse of Romans chapter 8. So flick back one page. This wasn't read for us before, but have a look at Romans 8 verse 1, very famous verse. Therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Friends, if you would like God to take your shame away, then please come and talk to one of the ministry staff today. Tamara and James and myself, we're going to stay down the front. We're going to make ourselves available down the front after the service. We would like for nothing more than to talk with you about how you can have your sin, your shame taken away by Jesus Christ. Well, the third and final thing about the spiritual aspect is seen in verse 28. You've got it there. Again, another great verse. And now we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. The thing that makes God God is that he can use our pain and our suffering to make us more glorious. You see, the charge that is very commonly brought against God is that if God really were good, then he wouldn't allow bad things to happen in this world. Now, the one big problem with that charge is that it declares that we know more than an infinite being does. Friends, I guarantee you, if you and I were standing at the foot of the cross some 2,000 years ago, right, looking up at a man who had done nothing except travel around Palestine, feeding the hungry and healing the sick and helping the oppressed and teaching people about God. Right? You too would have echoed the apostles who said, what possible good can come from this good man being cut down in the prime of his life? But as we've just heard, the cross is the single greatest thing God has ever done. because it made it possible for Jesus to take our sin away, take our shame away, and to one day walk into heaven. Friends, if God is infinite, then it is a certainty that he is going to be doing a thing or two in this big bad universe that you and I don't see or don't understand. It's actually arrogance of the highest order to say otherwise. See, what the cross shows us so wonderfully is that out of terrible things, through horrible things, because of dreadful things, God can bring enormous good. Yet without this understanding that God might be using our mental illness to make us into something more glorious, it is exceedingly difficult to manage our mental illness. So friends, if we want to manage mental illness, we need physical, we need emotional, and we especially need spiritual well-being. We need to remember what Jesus did for us on the cross. We need to remember what Jesus might be doing with us right now. And we need to remember what Jesus will one day give us. For I consider that the present sufferings are not even worth comparing to the glory that will be revealed in us.